You are listening to Punk News Podcast 525, halfway to 550, Adam. Podcast. It feels like we just did episode 500. We're already at 525 and more. 550. It's in the long range sights. What should we do for the big celebratory episode? Even though we just had a big celebratory episode, and even though we just had two end of year episodes.
Oh, it's something massive. Has to have to blow everything else out of the water. Well, 8 hours.
I don't know if I can do more massive than 500. I mean, you know, Alexander wept when he saw the breadth of his domain, because there were no more worlds, no other kingdoms to conquer. And it's like, Adam, what is there for us left to do in the Punk News Podcast except for revel in decadence and basically compliment ourselves?
That's all I'm in for at this point. I mean, John, I'm not sure if you've clued in, but I don't actually do any work anymore, at least as far as the actual namesake website goes. So I'm all about just coasting along on whatever credibility I have left to burn.
Well, listen, speaking of burning credibility, you can always visit podcast@punknews.org. And this is from Ermogon. And here's what Ermogon has to say. Can you stop talking about politics now? And that's from Ermogon.
Yeah. Totally. I'm down. You know what, John? I don't know about you, but there is a distinct lack of, I have to break the habits of the past 4 years. I sat down, I keep pulling my phone out of my pocket and like scrolling through Reddit or through Twitter or something like that. And I realized that like everything is kind of boring and unimportant in a wonderful way right now. Like the internet is slowly reverting back to being mostly useless garbage instead of really dire, frightening garbage. I mean, you know, super virus aside. I went and I think because the inauguration just happened and the internet is full of increasingly tiresome Bernie memes. And I realized is that like the internet can be tiring right now. Like I keep looking at my phone and being like, oh, fuck, if I have to see that picture of Bernie in a chair one more time, I don't care how funny it is, I'm going to lose it. And then I realized, no, that's good. That's the what do I want to be mad at the internet for? I don't want to be mad at the internet because it is a constant ticking clock of death. I want to be mad at it because people are memeing too much.
Is this the first time that people have gotten enthralled and then exhausted with a meme all within the span of 12 hours?
Everything is accelerated because we're all super online and we're stuck at home. And again, the past 4 years have sort of like trained us to be like hyper engaged in really unhealthy ways. And it's, we have to now realize that like we can just go away for a while and not engage with things, like go outside and just like look at a tree. That's what we should do. So letter writer, yeah, we're not gonna talk about politics right now because not simply that someone that is closer to our political stripe is in office, but that the levels of chaos are potentially lessened because at least rational minds are at play. So we can maybe be less reactionary because we won't be so fucking horrified every time we convene. At least that's my opinion.
True. But you know, there's a lot of people within the punk community that are like, this is almost the same as Trump. You're all falling for the sham. It's time to keep pushing. And so maybe I agree with that concept, but I will say, maybe people at least allow yourself a breath of relief, you know, because it could have been a lot worse if somebody got a second term. So I don't know. And more. Should we be relaxing now, or should we be doubling down twice as hard because we're all still victims of the same structure designed to grind the anybody but the ultra rich into fine paste?
We can't rest until the rich are in ultra fine paste.
There you go. All right. Well, listen, this is from Bobby. Bobby's written in a few times, at least. Actually, I think a lot of times. So thank you for writing in, Bobby. Bobby L says, I have this song attached. The band is called New Lenox. They do a 3-minute holiday winter Xmas themed EP released on Christmas every year for the past 16 years. My buddy Dave Rokos wrote the song and performs all the non-drum instruments. I, Bobby, play drums, and the title, lyrics, and cover art were all influenced by Fairy Tale of New York, which you all discussed last month. Thanks, Bobby. So let's play Bobby's track and come back and do some news. Thankfully, it wasn't a big week this week news-wise. Everyone's just kind of hanging around, you know, recovering. So maybe we're going to BS a little bit, but let's play this track, and we'll come back, and we'll hit some news, and then maybe, I don't know, talk about Dungeons and Dragons or something. Oh, this track is Fairy Tale of Gary, Indiana by New Lenox. And we are back, and that was Fairy Tale of Gary, Indiana, which includes Punk News Podcast listener Bobby.
I have a question about Christmas music before we go any further than this.
Sure.
Can you?
It's good and enjoyable and fun, and everybody loves it.
Sure, but do you have the particular affliction that I have, where out of season, you absolutely do not want Christmas music inflicted upon you?
Absolutely.
Right. So, my understanding is that if you're making music, it is not something that you make, you know, maybe these days when everyone's just recording garbage in their basement on a laptop, but usually it's not something that you just like flippantly barf out, you know, 3 or 4 days before the rest of the world hears it. You go to wherever you record your music, whether it's a studio or whether it's, you know, some guy's basement, I guess, with some equipment, but you record the things, you assemble the track, you do some work on it. Like, there's lead time involved. So I keep hearing all, like, we get close to Christmas and all these bands keep releasing their like punk rock Christmas songs or whatever, or like full blown. Like this year was like, there was like 3 or 4 bands that released like full EPs of like completely home, like new Christmas music that they've gone and wrote. And there's no way that those bands created that music in season. So that means they had to have got together in, I don't know, let's say September, and said, "Hey, we're gonna write and record a whole bunch of Christmas music." And then, and like they did that, and that sounds totally like a horrible thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like the key to a Christmas classic is that it conjures the Christmas feeling, which is an intangible feeling, which I can't even really describe. But I'm sure everybody that celebrates Christmas is aware of the Christmas vibe, the Christmas spirit, if you will. And I can't imagine trying to conjure that in August or September, you know.
I have an aversion to Christmas music at the best of times, like even when it is Christmas. And like maybe like Fairy Tale is like the one place where I can relent on that. But
see, to me, that's not a Christmas song. And I guess it kind of is, but I'm annoyed that that's on. And let's talk about Shane McGowan in 1 second. But I am annoyed with If I Should Fall from the Grace of God, because it has Fairy Tale New York in the middle, which is kind of a Christmas tune, and the album is not a Christmas album. So I'm listening to this really good album, and here's a Christmas song back to the regular album. Now, I hate that it's there. I think it should be a standalone 7-inch single.
I mean, like, you know what I compare it to is if you're sitting down and you're watching and this is probably true for everyone right now. You're watching some old sitcom, just, you know, reruns out of season. You're binging it on Netflix or whatever, right? You're sitting down and watching a bunch of episodes of like The Office or Parks and Rec or something like that. And then all of a sudden it's like, here's the Thanksgiving episode, here's the Christmas episode, right? And maybe when those aired, it was the season when that thing aired. But when it just kind of like shows up on TV whenever the hell you happen to hit that episode in streaming, like, I always feel like I have to like grit my teeth to get through it. I'm just like, ugh, here we go, holiday episode of this thing, and it's fucking June, right? Like, I don't know, I can't do it. So the there's some like natural, just I bristle at the thought. So the idea that these bands are going into studios and recording Christmas songs like months before Christmas, I mean, you're all superheroes, because that sounds totally horrible to me.
And more, would you watch Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, the Christmas episode, in April?
No, I would not. It has to be at least cold out.
I agree. For me, like I'll definitely listen to Christmas music, but it's got to be, I'll start the day after Thanksgiving and rock it, and not completely, you know, a little bit here and there, and you increase the frequency to the week of Christmas. And then basically the day after Christmas, I'll listen to a little bit, but I don't want to hear Christmas music at all until after next Thanksgiving.
So that said, we just played one for you. So sorry, people.
Well, listen, speaking of being timely, last Saturday, we had the Punk News Summer Soiree 4. Punk News Summer Soiree 4 was supposed to be in the summer, but of course, and actually, Adam and MD, I don't know if you guys remember this, when COVID first happened in March, I was like, ha, good thing I booked my venue for August, because once everything opens up again, things are going to get booked like crazy. So I'm glad that I'm booked in August, even though it's only March. Ha, 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 ha. And of course, that didn't happen at all. And so we didn't do a summer soiree in the summer, but we did summer soiree just last Saturday. And it starred Dan Bertinobicon of Chumbawamba with Gearwood Kramer and Anna Dooley, Crazy in the Brains, and Maura Weaver of Mixtapes, Ojukubu Station, Direct Hit, and like 19,000 other bands. And it was a more muted affair than our physical summer soirees, but I thought it was effective. And also we had KB Vickers, or Carabo, be our doorman, our virtual doorman, because he's our physical doorman at the shows. Adam at Carabo, who was KB at the time, but now he's Carabo. It was somewhat of a muted, laid-back affair. But I think all the bands did really, really cool sets, really, really interesting sets. Dambert's set was particularly interesting because he did like some musical interludes that were totally not classic era Chumbawamba, famous era Chumbawamba. Crazy in the Brains did this amazing like psychedelic thing with these weird backgrounds and stuff. And Maura Weaver was just like straight up. Oh, I just know she's wearing Christmas earrings. She with Reeves. That's funny. She just kind of did like a classic solo acoustic performance set. And we also had an intro video. And more, could you tell that I stitched these videos together with whatever the Adobe Movie Maker thing is these days? And I was so insanely out of my depth. And that I was so insanely out of my depth, I couldn't even make title cards. So what I did is I just made paint. Like, I took paint and then, the program Paint. Oh, and I made different cells of paint. So it looked like the words were changing, but it's really just different images of paint. And Emma, let me tell you, I love GarageBand. I thought, this can't be that much more different than GarageBand. I love GarageBand. Em, I hated making these videos. I love the videos, but making them, I hated it. I hated it so much. Anyway, Emma, what did you think of these videos? And what did you think of the performances? What did you think of doing the summer soiree in the winter? And what did you think of my amazing video editing skills?
I didn't know that. I couldn't tell it was paint and stuff. I thought the videos were edited pretty well. So good job. I really liked all the videos too. It was really really fun having like the host kind of throughout the whole thing and tying it all together. And kind of like the bite-sized chunks of it too. It was a lot easier to watch and everything. I thought everyone did a really good job. Like Maura Weaver's set was like amazing. I could have listened to like an hour more of that. Crazy and the Brains were really cool. like, I wrote notes while I was watching it, and I have in all caps xylophone twice.
Indeed.
So it was really cool. And the background was really neat. And then the last one with the Dambert and Kira Wood and Kramer and Anna Dooley, that was amazing. That was so cool. With like, I liked how they mixed it up too. It was like, oh, they're outside, and then they're doing like little skits, and then, you know, the video is changing, and they had the little ticker going at different points in the Halloween decorations. That was just perfect. That added so much more to it. And hopefully, like, it'll be able to happen in person soon. Because it looks like that would be a blast for a live show.
So, hopefully we'll – oh, go ahead, Adam. I'm sorry.
I have a numbering question for you here. Because I –
yeah,
I,
sure.
Because I saw various festivals kind of, like, pick a side on this. And you've clearly picked a side. And that is – so, you know, COVID killed the event from happening in real life. Or, in meat space, in the physical realm, right? So you put together this online version of it, but this is still the fourth of the summer soiree, right? Meaning the next one will be the fifth, right? So when someone writes the history of the Punk News summer soiree chronology, number four is an interesting chapter, but it is its own chapter. It's not some aside or anything like that. Like, it is what it is. I feel like a lot of events went and postponed themselves, but then also tried to do some online programming when it was just like, don't you just kind of want to own, like, I would think that, like, you just want to kind of own that as being like, yeah, this is, you know, this is the Fest 17, and it's the one that didn't actually happen, but hey, that's what happened. It's the next one will be 18. Like, you know, my preference is that if you're going to do something and no one can show up because there's like a once in a lifetime super virus happening, then you own it and number it and make that interesting footnote in the universe. And you don't just like postpone and number the next one where people can actually get together. That is my preference. Why did you choose?
For your exact reason. Actually, Adam's reason was in the back of my mind, and I agree with it 100%. I mean, I guess the idea, I mean, the reason I called it Summer Soiree, even though we did it in the middle of winter, is because I thought that was funny to call it Summer Soiree, even though it's winter, and no one seemed to really comment on that one way or another. The pragmatic reason why I called it four is because I really want to do five this upcoming year, but I might not be able to if concerts aren't even open by then, so I don't know what I'm going to do, because I've got some crazy ideas for five. And so it's only fitting that five is the biggest, weirdest, and wackiest one yet. And I really hope it happens. Even if we do it in the fall, it's still going to be Summer Soiree 5. But also, I like the idea that – and I use this concept a lot, including with the name Summer Soiree – is we dictate our own reality. So just because coronavirus says you can't have your live Summer Soiree, I'm like, yes, I can. But it's a video. So, ha! You know, so it's just I mean, listen. The Punk News Summer Soiree isn't something that's going to like get a generation of like young adults through to the next chapter of their being or whatever. I don't want to overstate its importance, but it is fun and it's important to me. And so I just like the concept of no matter what we're facing, we're going to plow ahead. Even if we have to modify it, we're not going to back down or compromise. Even though I guess I did compromise, didn't I? Because I didn't actually throw a live concert. So I'll compromise, but I won't back down. How about that, Adam?
That's okay. I mean, this comes from me being like a comic book kid when I was really young. But like the numbering of things is very important to me. And when the numbers fall out of place, it is equally infuriating. And then, like, so actually, there was something a few years ago that, and I don't know why, like I stopped being like a person that read like regular comic books, like. Like when I don't know, when I became an adult, right? But for some reason, I've always like, I've kept tabs on it, like online, like most, like the universe, what the publishers are publishing and stuff like that. I don't know why, but like it's always one of those things where if I'm like drifting around on the internet, I'll like drift onto some comic news site and kind of see what's going on. And one of the things that Marvel Comics did a number of years ago was they decided we're going to give everything the actual numbering of what it should be. So while they would reset, you know, the, you know, it's Spider-Man number one. And then like in a few years later, they'd be like, it's Spider-Man number one, because that sells, right? People show up. At one point, a few years ago, they went and they added it all up and they said, regardless of what number of this we're going to call it, this is actually the like 7,042nd issue of Spider-Man. If you add them all up, and we're going to say, oh, this is Spider-Man number five. And really what we mean is like, this is the 2015 era of Spider-Man number five, but they had like a second number on there that was like the actual, the chronological issue from the start. And I don't know if they do that anymore, but when it was one of those things where like I read that and I was just like, yes, I'm like, the universe is aligning among like in a way that I really want it to. Like, I want the numbering. And like, even like records, like I'm trying to think, I can't think of one exactly that matches up this, but sometimes you'll have like series of, like compilations are the easy ones, right? Where there's a certain dressing that's on, you know, on the labels and on the spines and the way that things line up and have like, you know, specific sequencing of things. Then every once in a while, like some dick decides they're going to like get really artistic with the, you know, they're going to say, oh, you know, given the boot 1, 2, 3 looked like this, but given the boot 4 is going to have a totally different look. And then just, oh, it drives me insane. I don't know why. So kudos for being concerned with numbering.
Well, thank you. And you know what I hate, Adam? I hate reboot. You know, when you're reading a comic book and they're like, we're going to reboot. It's like, thanks. Everything I read for the last 8 years didn't happen now. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. And more, what's your stance on comic books? Don't read them?
No. Don't reboot them because it sucks. John Constantine, they redid that and now it's just Constantine. And they like, oh my God, no. It's bad. It's really, really bad. Hellblazers, amazing. All that kind of stuff. The new stuff is really, really bad.
What's your favorite Hellblazer arc?
Ooh.
Break at the Gates of Hell, of course.
There's so many. Yeah. I can't pick.
Do you know who John Constantine is based off of? Looks-wise, not attitude-wise, but look-wise.
Oh, I read this, but I don't remember.
Oh, it's relevant to this show. I know.
Adam, are you a Hellblazer fan?
No, I'm not. That was on the, like, I was at, as a Marvel kid, I didn't read DC stuff as a kid, and I, by extension, didn't read Vertigo stuff, so I missed out on all that when it first happened.
DC's better, Adam. Too bad.
It is.
You know what? It's just one of those things. Like, it's like you're a Catholic or a Protestant. Some of you can't shake it, right? So it was just... That's just what happened.
I actually read them. I think those battle lines aren't as strict as they used to be, but I mean, I read them both. I was mainly DC, though. I did like Spider-Man and Punisher. But anymore, I'm sorry. What were you saying about comic books? I started talking about Hellblazer.
No, they're all so good, and they're finally making Sandman into a show, and Neil Gaiman's like going to be the narrator, and I'm really, really excited. Do you guys read Sandman?
Everett, Sandman, get out of here!
Yeah!
What's your favorite Sandman arc?
The whole thing just goes together so well. Like, I don't know, I can't pick, you know? And then, like, I read the Lucifer spinoff series, too. Like,
is that
more recently.
I didn't read that one.
No, what's the guy's name?
Grant Morrison?
No, Grant Morrison's amazing. No, not him, though. One minute, I'll look it up, because that's...
Mo Howard?
Lucifer.
Lawrence Rysand? Andrew Bullock?
This is a really good indication, listeners, of how much interesting punk news happened this week.
Adam, did you ever read Sandman or Swamp Thing?
No, I didn't. I haven't.
Adam, who's your favorite X-Man? Cyclops? Sabretooth?
I don't know.
No.
You know what? It's weird. My kids ask me this because my kids are starting to like pay attention to media and stuff like that. So it's like the most frequent question I'll get from one of my kids, and they'll be like, they're like, who's your favorite superhero? And I'm like, I don't know. I have a lot of really complicated feelings.
I'll tell you what I love, man. Like, I got into this in the Judge Dredd, especially early Judge Dredd. What people don't realize is like early Judge Dredd, he's kind of a bad guy. Like, there's one issue where he puts a guy in jail for having sugar. Because you're not supposed to have sugar. And there's another episode where like puts a guy in jail for having two jobs. So anyway, I love Judge Dredd, man.
Lucifer was written by Mike Carey, and it's based off of like Neil Gaiman.
What I was going to say is, well, Family Man, that's, yeah, I was confused with the Family Man series because Family Man was a Hellblazer arc, but the Corinthian, no, but Family Man is in Sandman where there's the serial killer convention. I'll tell you what, I think my favorite arc, though, is when Sandman and Delirium go looking for destruction. It's good, that's a good arc, people.
That was good, too.
All right, listen, people, let's talk about some punk news, not Sandman. All right, listen. John Shea from Ice Earth, he's been arrested.
right up on the punk news thing here.
So listen, so as everyone knows, the Capitol was stormed by a bunch of wackadoos, I guess about 2 or 3 weeks ago now, at Trump's urging. And one of the main guys was John Schaefer, who was captured front row center in a picture. And honestly, like, it almost looks like a staged picture. He's got his finger forward. He's wearing black Dahlia biker gloves, and he's screaming, "Storm the Capitol, storm the Capitol." And someone on Twitter say, "That's John Schaefer of Iced Earth." And as we said last week, the week before, I don't know how anybody recognized. I guess maybe because I'm not an Iced Earth fan. But, like, Adam, if you saw, like Daniel Romano in a mob, would you recognize him?
Yeah, because he's weird looking. But, yeah, I don't know. It's hard. I bet you out of context, honestly, I probably wouldn't recognize a lot of the musicians that I like just because you're not expecting them. Like, there's this mental leap, right? Now, you know, Schaefer has a like a gnarly metal beard, so that might give him away, I think.
Lots of people have that, like, hobo redneck beard, though, you know?
You know what? I wouldn't assume. Like, if I saw someone in the crowd, like, I would not go and look at. Okay, I was about to say, like, the most distinctive person ever, and that would. I was going to say, like, if I looked in the crowd. No, I was going to say, like, if I looked and I saw, like, Jay Bentley, I wouldn't be like, "That's not Jay Bentley." I'm like, "But no, I would. I'd
recognize." I don't know who Jay Bentley is. Is that Bad Religion?
Yeah, I feel like all the Bad Religion guys kind of look like Muppets at this point, so I'd probably recognize most of them. Yeah, anyways, whatever. Point being, I bet you I wouldn't. I bet you I would not recognize them because I wouldn't expect it. I wouldn't be making that connection.
So anyway, well, he was arrested by the FBI, which is serious. He was charged with 6 counts, including knowingly entering or remaining in any residential building or grounds without lawful authority, disrupting the orderly conduct of governmental business, knowingly engaging in an act of physical violence against any person or property on a restricted building, engaging in an act of physical violence in the Capitol building, violent entry and disorderly conduct in the Capitol building, picketing the Capitol building without proper permits or something like that. So anyways, he hypothetically, that could be some pretty heavy duty punishment. I think he's been bailed out by now. But I will say is at one point, I was going back and forth. I'm like, well, how much of a spank should these guys get? They storm the Capitol building and they, you know, I don't think they knew what they were doing. I think they just showed up and didn't know what to do, which they kind of rioted, essentially, like what might happen at a concert. So I'm like, well, you know, I mean, they're idiots, but I don't know if they're really that bad. But I'm thinking, you know what, though? Like, if a bunch of Russians, like, stormed the Capitol and tried to block the electoral – the certification of the electoral votes, I'd be like, put them in jail forever. And so I'm thinking these guys probably shouldn't get that much mercy. I don't know, man. And what do we do when our favorite artists are literally committing treason against the United States of America? Well, I guess not that. I guess Adam and M like him just fine because he's not really committing any treason against them. So I guess you guys are still Ice Earth fans, right?
Yeah, man. Like the previous group that stormed the Capitol was our folks, right? So this is just the next one in the line. I'm referencing, what was it? 1814, was that it? When, like, it wasn't even Canadians, because Canada didn't exist. Like, the British, like, yeah. the asterisk Canadians of the time burnt down your capital. But in any case...
And that's when it was moved from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. Oh, wait, no, that's not true. Never mind, so I take it back.
I don't actually know U.S. history all that well, so let's just say... I'm not going
to
argue. No,
capital of the United States used to be in Philadelphia. And then they moved it to Washington, D.C. to make it more secure against British invasion. That's true.
Yeah, I feel like when we burnt it, it was in Washington, though. I remember hearing, I keep saying we, when it was, like, that was in Wii. It was the fucking British. There was no Wii, right? And I don't want to take like credit for what colonial Britain did in the 1800s. That's probably not where I want to go. What fascinates me about this is, especially this, like what happened to the Iced Earth guy in particular, is like the laws that he was, or the laws that he's charged with breaking here are incredibly specific in a way that I feel are not often tested in court. Like, it was not violent entry and disorderly conduct. It was violent entry and disorderly conduct in a Capitol building, which means like there's a specific law that is out there that applies to doing this shit in a Capitol building. Like, how often do those things actually happen, that those laws get like trotted out? That's pretty interesting.
I was actually, like, I was reading through it. I'm like, disorderly conduct in a governmental business. I'm like that's the best thing to get. Like, that's like throwing a hissy fit in the post office. But then I got storming the Capitol. I was like, there's the spike, you know. And more, this guy, how much mercy should he get? Should we say he's a troubled man that needs help and correction? Or is he an insurrectionist that should be punished harshly by the vengeful state? And what's your favorite Iced Earth album? And did you go see Iced Earth in 1997 with Tom McNamara the week after you saw Rob Halford solo?
I did, yeah. harshest penalty. Like, that's an affront against democracy and stuff. I saw, too, that their label dropped them. Like, there's no mention of Iced Earth, or he was in another band, Wizards and Demons, I think.
He was in Wizards and Demons? I think Wizards and Demons is a band that, like, really predates – I mean, it's a stupid name for a band. But I think that, like, super predates Iced Earth. I think Wizards and Demons goes back to, like, the 80s. I'll look right now. Adam, okay. Wizards and Demons, is that a terrible name for a band?
I mean, like, if you're going to be, like a super nerdy Dungeons & Dragons core band, I don't even know what that sound is. I just made it up.
Oh, 1997? They formed in 1997? Gee, there's no excuse for that.
No, you would have known better to name your band that at that point. I mean, is this not a weird position to find yourself in as a quote-unquote punk rocker? Because on the one hand, I want to be like, yeah, fuck the government, right? But what I mean, like, yeah, fuck the government, I don't necessarily mean, you know, yeah, let's have a bunch of white supremacists try to destroy democracy, right? Like, that's not what I mean by, yeah, fuck the government. Here we're looking at this and going like, yes, the full, we want the full, you know, authority of the state thrown against this person. Whereas, you know, in our propaganda listening youth, we would not be advocating for the full authority of the state to be thrown against anyone. And it's such a strange mode to end up in, where you go, you know what, like, if we all turns out we all kind of like the concept of democracy more than we like the platitudes of just yelling fuck the government. So if we can, maybe can we thread that needle and have both? Like, can we acknowledge that the people that are in government are by and large a bunch of morons and self-serving rich people, but at the same point, we kind of like the idea of democracy. Like, can we have both those things? Like, I feel like we can, but it's a strange position, right? Like, in a way, I feel for the dead Kennedys and their Mitt Romney tweet from last week. Like, it's a weird mode to be thrust into, coming up in this like anti-authoritarian scene, and then have to go stop and say, like, whoa, 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 we didn't mean that kind of anti-authoritarian. Like, we had to be really specific now about what we mean by anti-authoritarian.
Yes. So, listen, John Schaefer's got a problem. Em, do you think he's going to weasel out of this or get out of this jam relatively unscathed? Or is this going to be the undoing of John Schaefer?
I think it's going to be the undoing in one way.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
In one way, but then I think he's going to get a lot more fans. Like, oh, yeah, we were also storming the Capitol. We're going to listen to you now.
See, I actually disagree with that slightly, because as soon as Trump left office and Biden took over, like, I don't know how central Q and all that crap is to this stuff, but a lot of publications are making it seem like it's pretty central. And so surprisingly, a lot of the main Q guys, this just happened, I guess, the day before. They're like, well, like the main guy's like, well, it's over. We lost. And that's it. And then like the followers are like, don't know what to do. Now, that's just the outside media looking into this really dark and obscure and weird and messed up section of the internet.
It's the problem of being like a person that believed in like the end of the Aztec calendar. Right. Because that calendar was going. What was it? 2012. Is that when it ended?
Yeah. Right? But actually, that's not true. Like, that's a misstatement. Well, the Aztec end of the world isn't actually the end of the world. It's just the farthest it the Aztecs calculated.
If you subscribe to that theory, there is an end. Like, there was a deadline inherent in the theory, and at a certain point, you either cross the deadline and the snake god emerges in the sky, or it doesn't. Right? Like, it's easy, I think, to be a believer in something that is non-committal, that doesn't have any kind of time frame attached to it. Like, if you believe in Bigfoot, then the fact that there is no Bigfoot that you have seen, you know, this week, that doesn't matter too much, because you still think Bigfoot is out there. And it's, you know, it's easy to string that along. But if you believe that, like, next Tuesday, the Jell-O people are going to arrive, and it is next Tuesday when the Jell-O people arrive, like, there's no moving that deadline, and then they don't, well, then what are you doing? You're just standing around looking like an idiot afterwards, right? Like, you either have to, like, remake your whole belief system to account for the fact that the thing that you've been advocating for didn't happen, or it all sort of, falls apart on you. And I feel that, like, you know, of course, these people that have crazy right-wing conspiracy theories on the internet are still going to have right-wing conspiracy theories on the internet. But to a certain degree of them that believed that, like, the storm was coming, they believed that, like on the steps of the Capitol during the inauguration, all of a sudden, like, Trump was going to emerge from, like, a secret elevator that was going to raise out of the floor and, you know, shoot lightning out of his fingers at all the Democrats, because that didn't happen on the date that they prescribed that thing was going to happen. It has to be, like, disorienting for a lot of the people that had sort of, like, bought into that thing hook, line, and sinker. So I feel more optimistic than not that a lot of the gasoline that was on that fire is suddenly going to vanish because it was so specifically tied to, like, a date and time and person. Like, if you believe that, like, Masons run the world, like, sure, you can still believe that, because there's, you know, there was nothing about, like, last Tuesday or whatever that disproved that one way or another. You keep believing that until you die. But, you know, if you believe that, you know, the rapture's happening and it's this date and time and it doesn't, well, then fuck, what are you going to do?
Not to drag the conversation out. I was surprised I wasn't surprised, but how the dramatic effect that just simply cutting off Trump's Twitter really stopped his whole movement, honestly. Like, it just shut down everything. And I was surprised that they didn't try to find some other way to communicate. It does make you concerned that, A, why does a private organization have so much power over communication? But then also, why wasn't the government using its own channels to discuss things and report on things rather than using Twitter, a private company that has overseas investors anyway? Adam,
you know what? I was honestly surprised that the incoming admin is sort of playing doing the dance where they're going to say, okay, we're taking over the POTUS Twitter account or whatever and doing all those things. Like, I was wondering, like, if they were just going to show up and as part of, like, you know, renormalizing the world, they were just going to be like, you know what? When we want to communicate with you, we are going to have a news conference and, you know, we'll put a press release or something. So fuck your
maybe
internet.
Their own website.
Yeah, we'll maybe put it on our website and just not participate in anything. But I guess I don't know. Maybe there's maybe maybe there's some reason why you want to make sure that you are where people are, because in a vacuum, it just gets filled up with nutbags otherwise. I don't know. But my inclination, especially if you're an old man, right? Like Biden is an old dude. He doesn't give an ass about Twitter. I mean, like Trump did, which was weird, right? But like my mom doesn't give a shit about Twitter. She's never going to use it. And she never, you know, I'm sure at one point she signed up an account and wrote absolutely nothing into it and looked at it for 45 seconds and was like, this is dumb, and then got off of it, which is the appropriate old person way to approach new technology. Like, John, you and I are of a certain age where we should not have like a TikTok account, right? Like,
I'm drawing the line, Adam. I'm drawing the line. I'm not going to do a TikTok.
Right? If you or I went and started a TikTok account, it would be fucking embarrassing. And we'd look like old people trying to be cool. Now, M, as a certified young person who is hip, she could have like 6 TikTok accounts or whatever, right? But we could not. And that is okay. And at the time when I am like 80 million years old, or however old Biden is at this point, like, and whatever is like the hot technology for like 13-year-olds at that point, I better not even be aware of it, let alone like wanting to have an account on it. And I'm surprised that he didn't get into office and just be like, you know, fuck Twitter, and just like Twitter was the problem, and just like said no. So what do I know? This is why no one wants me to run their communications campaigns.
Adam, how can we have the greatest reach and exposure? I don't know, man. Screw TikTok. Speaking of people that are expanding their reach and communication, Mike Watt has released a cover of Bikini Kill's Rebel Girl. And, of course, Mike Watt famously had Kathleen Hanna show up on a vocal clip on his second solo album, Contemplating the Engine Room. Maybe it was the one before that. Anyways, they've released a 7-inch single of Bikini Kill, and it's out now. And it had a very divisive reaction on the Punk News commenter base. And more, was this cool? And having 3 dudes cover Bikini Kill, is that an interesting artistic statement, or is that 3 old dudes just not get?
I'm kind of torn with that, because like it's cool because it's, you know, inclusive and everything, but like it felt really weird listening to it a little bit, you know. Like I thought they did like a decent job. They missed some words and everything. And like I listened to it, and then I had to listen to like the original version kind of like right after, you know. But overall, like they did all right. I think it was an interesting choice, and it's good to see them, you know, like supporting other artists and doing something unexpected, you know.
There's 2 things that give this a pass. The one is that Mike Watt. Yeah, like he's one of those people where you hear him and you're like, it's Mike Watt. Isn't that great? Right? And, you know, so he's one of those, he'd read the phone book and you'd be like, isn't that cool? It's Mike Watt. So it's got that going for it. But the other thing is that this wasn't something that they went and cocked up in isolation, right? So like it was part of this Kill Rockstars 30th thing. So, you know, it's a bunch of artists covering other artists from the Kill Rockstars family. So within that context, it's not, I don't know, it's not particularly offensive to me that it exists. If it was just that, like, you know, Mike Watt went out and independently put out a single of like one of the most famous Bikini Kill songs, like that would be kind of strange. But in the context of it being part of this project, you know, whatever. Fine. I'm not mad.
People were mad.
That's the wonderful thing I was getting at, though. This is the kind of thing that people should be mad about on the internet. We don't want to be mad about like the fucking concentration camps, right? We want to be mad about, you know, should Mike Watt be covering Bikini Kill?
Okay, well said. We talked about this briefly last week because it happened while we were recording, or it was announced while we were recording. Sadly, Sylvain of the New York Dolls passed away. New York Dolls, all time amazing band. One of the greatest bands of all time. Sylvain also had a couple of 3 solo records, I believe. One was called like Criminal 78 or something. And the second one was called like Sylvain Sylvain, and the last one was Sylvain Sylvain and the Teardrops, or Sil Sylvain and the Teardrops. Sylvain is actually a really interesting guy because he was actually born in Egypt as a Jewish person born in Egypt. And if you've ever been to Egypt or you know about Egyptian history, there really are an extremely few number of Jewish people in Egypt, extremely few. And so it's unusual to be a Jewish person from Egypt. And so Sylvain moved from Egypt when he was like 8 or 10 or something to New York, joined the New York Dolls, became one of the most important punk bands or proto-punk bands ever. And after the New York Dolls, he had a couple of solo releases, which people dug. But similar to David Johansen, pre to Buster Poindexter, he really did have trouble kind of blowing through. And he was always just Sylvain Sylvain, a highly respected artist, but never making super amounts of money. So RIP Sylvain Sylvain. The weird thing how about for David Johansen now is David Johansen is the only living original New York Doll left. What must that feel like?
I don't know how to answer that question. It is strange to end up with it being the person that like that owns the legacy of a group of artists that like participated as a group, and you'd be the last one. I mean, like Johansen being the frontman, I guess that like it's a little bit easier for him to for him to like own that, right? As opposed to, you know, if you were, I don't know, if you were Billy Mercier or someone and you were the last one, then that would be potentially a little stranger. But that's sort of that's the Ramones situation that we're in though, right? Whereas like Markey's got to go around and be the guy, or like CJ has got to be the guy that represents that band. So I don't know.
I think Markey was the guy that everyone was like, Markey's whack. Or Tommy was actually alive when Markey was alive, but Tommy wasn't doing that much Ramones wise. So I think most people look to Markey as like the last living Ramone or the last active Ramone. But then when CJ kind of had his comeback, he kind of stole that from Markey, and in a way, the CJ shows were pretty rad, honestly. So, you know, maybe that was all right.
I mean, the part of it is because, like, Tommy grew out of being a Ramone in a way. Like, he grew into an adult, right? Like, Markey, once he became Markey Ramone, like, never unbecame Markey Ramone. So, you know, for better or worse. So, there was that aspect to it, too. Anyways, I don't know.
Adam, trivia time.
Yeah.
Adam, trivia time. What famous punk classic LP, which I think actually isn't that good, did Markey drum on before the Ramones? People tend to forget this.
Before the Ramones? He wasn't involved in one of the Heartbreakers things, was he?
Richard Howe and the Voivod.
Was he on Blank Generation?
Yeah, he's the drummer for Blank Generation, the album.
Oh, no shit.
Overrated album, I'm sorry to say.
Love comes in spurts, John. It's very subtle.
I think that's almost too stupid. Like, Richard Howe's like, love comes in spurts. Woo wee, wow, woo wee, wow. It's like, yeah, I get the double entendre, Richard. Literally repeat it like 27 times. And every time you repeat it, you go, woo woo, wow, wee, just to make sure that you know that I say, when you say love comes in spurts, you're talking about something other than just the abstract idea of love. Thanks, Richard. Thanks for pointing that out. Real clever. And more. Richard Hell, does he suck or is he awesome?
Oh, the subtlety of the lyrics really sell it. One of the best.
Are you sad about Sylvain Sylvain and more and New York Dolls? Greatest band ever or definitely the greatest band ever?
Definitely the greatest band ever. And yeah, like that's too bad. You know, like, seemed like a decent person, put out really good music, and that's really too bad that he's gone. Rest in peace.
All right, let's play a song. Who's going to play a song?
All right, here. I will do something completely that is a cheat. So last week we played Personality Crisis by the New York Dolls upon us learning during the show that Sylvain had died. So on a very thinly connected note, only on the most superficial of levels, and only because it's kind of stuck in my head right now. Here's the band Personality Crisis, which was an 80s punk band that was out of Winnipeg, Manitoba, that featured a few members that went on to play in a number of sort of notable notable acts in punk bands, the primary one being drummer John Card, that went on at some point to play with SNFU, to play with DOA, to play with the Subhumans. I mean, he guested it on a No Means No record. Basically, any Canadian punk band that anyone gave a shit about, he was part of that. But also one of the Personality Crisis members, Richard Duquet, he at one point appeared on the much derided later day Guns N' Roses records. So the band had some legs behind them. But anyway, still, this is Personality Crisis. Big, tough, kind of goofy punk band from Winnipeg from the 80s. This is from their kind of one and only LP, which was called Creatures for a While. And I'm going to play a song from there that I like, which is... What are we going to play? Let's play People in Glass. So this is People in Glass from the band Personality Crisis. Named after New York Dolls song, Personality Crisis. Because, you know, everything we do is 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. So here you go.
And that was Personality Crisis, the Canadian band. I had something funny to say about that, but I can't remember what it was now. Something about some Canadian band. Well, oh well. Hey, Adam, what? You know, can you name the other punk connection to Guns N' Roses, the early punk connection to Guns N' Roses?
Well, I mean, like the shit. What's his name from The Replacements? Like, is that where you're going?
No. Tommy Stinson?
Yeah. Oh.
Good connection, though. I missed that one.
Okay, well, what is it?
Izzy Stradlin was involved in the punk scene before Guns N' Roses took place. And actually, Axl Rose was a part of the early L.A. punk scene, too. But Izzy Stradlin had a punk band long before Guns N' Roses.
Hmm.
Monty Messick of PFL was also in that band.
Well, there you go. You know more about
Guns N' Roses. And by Izzy Stradlin, I don't mean Izzy Stradlin. I mean Duff McKagan. Anyways, let's talk about Bad Religion. Bad Religion put out a song in regards to the inauguration, although they didn't directly say they're talking about the inauguration of Trump, but it was clear they were. It was called Emancipation of the Mind. It appears to be a standalone digital single, and it's out now. The punk news commenters, in stark contrast to the Descendants track, which they hated and John loved, they loved this new track. Adam White, Bad Religion, Emancipation of the Mind. Awesome track with Bad Religion telling us like it is, or Dr. Greg being way too up his own behind, Dr. Greg being way too up his own behind, and making gentle music that isn't offensive to anybody. That's why people like it.
What's your opinion, John? Jeez. All right. So I mean, I'll come up the middle on this. This song is fine. It's not particularly anything, but this is not. I feel like this is getting sold as something that it is not. Like, Everyone, us included, we're all, you know, this is a inauguration themed track. It's commemorating the end of the Trump years or something like that. I don't know if that's quite true. I feel like this was a B-side from their last record that they were just sort of sitting on, and they chucked it out there at the right moment. And, you know, it's entirely their prerogative to do that. But I don't quite buy that this is a that this is like a song of the moment. I feel like this is a, you know, it's something that they probably had sitting around when they recorded Age of Unreason in 2019. And it's, you know, it's a B-side. It's a fine B-side from that context. I don't buy that it is some triumphant, you know, zeitgeist capturing single. No.
Enmore, do you enjoy Brian Baker's Keith Richards for President t-shirt in this proto photo and in this promo photo? And do you think he bought it from Kmart because that's where John brought the identical t-shirt from?
Oh, really?
Yeah. that's one of my favorite t-shirts, honestly. I actually had to go to like seven Walmarts. I mean, not Walmart, Kmart to find it because they like it's a super rad shirt and they sold out of it like super quickly. And I was actually out in New Jersey for work, and I was out in the middle of Nowheresville, New Jersey, and like Nowheresville, like 50 miles from any like real place. And they had a Kmart there. I'm like, I'm going to go in and see if they got the Keith Richards shirt. And they did. And I snatched it up and I went to the counter. I'm like, I've been looking all over for this shirt. And the lady at the counter was like, that's great.
$7.95. Hold on, and you can answer that, but then we have to come back to this Kmart thing.
You don't know what Kmart is, Adam?
No, you're just we'll come back.
All right, Em, what do you think of this track? Do you want a Keith Richards for President t-shirt?
Yes, because it looks cool, and he'd be a good president. I thought the song was really boring. I like Bad Religion, but this song is not for me.
Yeah, I thought the song was pretty boring. Like I'm still maintaining. People were like dissing on the Descendants track. They're like, yeah, the Descendants are fired up, pissed off, and they're cutting a 45-second track. That's punk rock. Bad Religion's like, here's a 4-minute song with lots of words that's like kind of gentle sounding and is a gentle reflection on the status of mankind in 2021. And people are like, yeah, this is so good. You know, like, I love Bad Religion. Yay. I'm like, this is boring and doesn't get anyone to do anything except for to relax. And that's not the purpose of punk. Thumbs down. Adam, go ahead. Kmart. Great place. I like Kmart.
What year was this?
It would have been like 2017, the final year of Kmart, maybe 2016.
No, but you see, the final year of Kmart in Canada was like 1998. So So there is a, like, Kmart became a like another discount department store called Zellers at a certain point in Canada. But
Zellers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of name is that? Zeller.
It's not around anymore either, so don't worry. But yeah, like the Hudson's Bay Company, I think, bought Kmart's assets in Canada and renamed them Zellers and stuff like that. But we had Kmart. Like, it's like a name of my youth, right? Like, it's one of those places. So the fact that you're like, oh, I went to Kmart and bought a shirt. I'm like, when you were 8? Like, when did you go to Kmart?
Well, I did go to Kmart when I was 8, but I did not buy Keith Richards' t-shirt at Kmart when I was 8. Mm.
I definitely went to Kmart when I was 8.
Did you guys have a Clover?
No. Don't have Clover.
Clover was like Kmart, but better.
Actually, I've decided that knowing old department stores is really one of the things you can do to signify that you're not one of the youth anymore. And it's like, it's really one of like the things you can lord over them, because it's a strange blind spot where like they have no idea what you're talking about. And in particular, if you can use it to, like, for locations around town. So there is a
hey, mister, can you tell me how to get to?
You'd be like, you know,
over. Yeah, just go by where the old Kmart was.
Well, exactly. So
I don't know where that is. Kmart.
There is a intersection in Niagara Falls here that it is actually where our Kmart was. But before it was a Kmart, it was a department store called Towers. Now, I have no idea how widespread the Towers brand was, but it's one that, like, if you were born at a certain point in the 80s, you knew it as Towers. And if you say to, like, anyone that is, like, I don't know, like 38 or older, oh, go to where the Towers Plaza was, or go to Towers Plaza, they know what you're talking about. But no one like no one any younger than that has any fucking idea what you're talking about. But I still do it all the time, not even thinking about it, right? Where it's, oh, it's Towers Plaza. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, okay. So if I'm talking to old people, I can throw that out there. And I get a little bit of respect. It's like a, it's like some sort of like trench slang from the war where, you know, it signifies.
Like I see some old man, like a walking down the street. And Adam's like, oh, yeah, I just came by from where the old towers was. The old man's like, respect, son. Adam, how about Chi-Chi? You remember Chi-Chi's?
No, we didn't have those.
Man, Chi-Chi's was great. All right, listen, I think we got one other thing to talk about today. Adult Mom and then more band. And more, first of all, and more bringing the fresh spice to punk music, bringing the style that the commenters are not ready for. And they're like, you know, Epitaph has changed my day. Yeah, it doesn't sound like friggin' what's that skate rock band from Santa Cruz, Adam?
What, Pennywise?
No, we're not Pennywise. They're not from Santa Cruz, Adam. They're from the South Bay.
It's all the same to me.
You and I think they're just fine, but the readers love them. What the hell's the name of that band? They got some metal influences.
Oh, what, like Strung Out?
Strung Out!
They're not an Epitaph band. They were a fat band.
Well, all right, fine. Whatever. Wizo? Was that an Epitaph band? You know, like some commenter was like, Epitaph is changing my name.
Wizo was from Germany.
All right. Whatever. Name any Epitaph band. Fine. Bad Religion. You know, if you want to be major about it or whatever. You know, like, Epitaph has changed my day. Yeah, Epitaph has changed since Bad Religion in 1996. Username, Hail Satan. Get over it. The youth is taking over. So either get in line or step aside, old man. You're no longer of any use. Go hang out at Bowers Plaza with the rest of them. The rest of them waiting to die. You know, Ed Moore and the rest of them are bringing the new charge, the new flavor, the new style of punk, an inclusive form of punk, which I might not even agree with all the general aspects of, but I can appreciate that the kids, that the youth are bringing in the new style and keeping it up and keeping it fresh and keeping it challenging. And so that's the point of punk rock, not to make you comfortable, but to make you challenge your own stances and really question what you believe. Is that truth, or is that just what you want to be true? And more, Adult Mom.
Yes.
Man, take the Epitaph record. Tell us about it. Did you enjoy the jam Saber?
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. I had heard of them before, but I'd never listened to them. And the only reason I'd heard of them is because they were part of the
bullshit.
Didn't pay royalties.
Oh, that's right. Who the main one that was carpet that jam? Was that Illuminati Hotties?
Yeah.
So was Illuminati Hotties the one that really kicked off the whole Tiny Engines isn't paying the royalties? Or was there one band before that?
It might have been Adult Mom.
Mm.
But I'm not 100% sure. I don't know who, like, sparked it. But, yeah, like, they weren't paying royalties to their artists. So hopefully the deal with Epitaph works out well and they get paid this time. but yeah, no, I thought the song was good and like the video was neat, and it was it's an animated video, and there's more animated videos kind of popping up. And they're really cool. Big fan of the animated videos.
It was Adult Mom who was the first one that really kicked off the problem with Tiny, not the problem, who I guess brought these issues to light, if you will, bro.
Sounds good.
Adam White, the new wave of Epitaph punk rock. Are you going to jump in and stay with the youth, or are you going to get cast aside and play with the rest of the old part?
Epitaph can do what they want these days. I'm not super tuned in to the current Epitaph sound, but I've never got the impression that they're doing anything untowards. And, you know, say what you will about a lot of the stuff that they put out these days not being, you know, not being punk either by their old standards or by whatever standard you want to hold punk.
Was it ever punk?
Well, sure. I mean, it was very legitimately punk for a lot of time, I would argue. But on the other hand, you know, you never hear stories about, you know, Mr. Brett, you know, doing something sleazy or fucking anyone over. Like, as far as I can tell, the dude has run a legitimate enterprise up until now. And while he's definitely put out his fair share of, music that I would consider to be, like, opportunistically bad, like, you know, especially during the early 90s, where they'd be putting out a lot of schlocky emo stuff that I wouldn't want to have to listen to ever.
You mean early 2000s?
Early 2000s, right? Where it really felt like Epitaph was trend jumping for a while there. And there was a little bit of an argument for a while where they'd be like, hey, well, you know what? We put out one record by, you know, Eyeliner Band 45 that gives us a lot of money that we can put out, you know, cool music or whatever. And sure, whatever. You can make that argument one way or the other. But regardless of all that, all the kinds of bands that have come through there, you never get a word that Epitaph is doing anything gross with it. It seems like it's on the up and up. So, you know what? I'm down. And you know what? Through Anti, they're giving a lot of voice to a lot of cool music that I don't think would necessarily get the same kind of push. So yeah, I'm down with Epitaph.
Adam, I'm going to blow your mind. Broken Side is still around.
I'm like not dead or like still around.
Still recording music.
For Epitaph?
No, I don't think so. I think for themselves.
Oh, thank God. All right, well, then that's okay.
But listen, is there anything else that we should cover? Anything else that you guys want to talk about? Anything else you guys want to complain about?
What should we talk about? What should we complain about? What should we do? What should we do? John, I feel like we are in a reset period. It's going to take a little while for us to decide what's up, what's down, what's going on.
What goes up must come down. Do 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 goes.
Yeah, okay, it's good time to end this episode because you're just singing. Do you want to play something, John? And pony.
I can play. I would say. Oh wait, well, I guess you. Well, Em, were you going to play something?
If you're not sure.
Go ahead. What do you got to play?
All right. So, this band, they're called Hoity Toity. They're out of California. They're like a pop punk band. And the song I'm going to play is off their Not Your Kind EP. And it's called Small Dogs. And it's like, I saw someone describe it as flamenco punk, which is really cool. So check out Small Dogs by Hoity Toity.
Dreams, 'cause they're haunted. You
that was Small Dogs by Hoity Toity. This week was, you know, kind of a goofy, silly release. I mean, goofy, silly episode, which that's fine. You know, listen, everyone's kind of relaxing, taking a breath of relief. Let's keep the fight up. But listen, you got to refuel every once in a while. You got to recharge. And more, you agree. Sometimes you just got to step back and recharge and, you know, just feel the vibes.
Yeah, I agree. If you don't, your brain's going to turn into soup.
Adam, any last word?
You don't want soup brain. Not anymore. Not in today's economy.